This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The rising cost of living, it's been the one thing on every Malaysian's mind. So let me lay it all out for you. Here's what's been going on. There's been a 14% jump in sugar costs since October of last year, an 11% increase in petrol in September, an average 15% to 16.9% climb for electricity since January. Assessment rates are on the way up, public transport, food, not forgetting next year's GST. Prices are on the rise and people are feeling the pinch.
Wow, so many Malaysians are poor, man.
You just wake up. You are not free from the thinking that the big brother will take care of you. Welcome to the brave new world.
That is Bob. He's a businessman with grand plans for his future. He has a wife and five kids. We'll be hearing more from him a little later. My name is Uma Pagan Ampake Pagan, and today I'm going to take you into the lives of Bob and his wife Emma, of Kamwan, Alia and Ili Farhana. This is Here and Now in Malaysia, produced by the Economic Transformation Programme. And on this week's show, we're speaking to Malaysians from different walks of life about what they're feeling and how they're coping with the rising cost of living. First up, a day in the life. We travel to Ipoh, we travel to Bukit Kapa, we speak to Malaysians of various ages from every walk of life in an attempt to ascertain just what their lives are like in the face of rising prices. Later, in part two of our program, we'll speak to our experts to better understand the economic forces at work as well as some alternative solutions to living a good life. But first, let's meet Kee Kam Wan. She was a government servant, an ex-teacher. She lives with her sister-in-law in Ipoh, and the both of them are in their 70s. They currently live on their government pensions.
First of all, I would just let you know what I live on, my pension, and whatever extra cash I can save in the banks, the interest from there.
Kamwan is no stranger to rising prices, something she says has been especially prevalent these last few years.
It has been steadily increasing, but the jump has been quite obvious in the past 3 to 5 years, especially with the petrol price going up. And certain subsidies taken away.
For her, as a pensioner, the biggest pinch is due to rising food costs.
Oh, especially in the past few years, prices of food and the basic needs have gone sky high. Right. Well, since we are pensioners, we don't spend much on entertainment or whatever. I guess the topic that we can talk on is food. Everybody needs to eat. I will try to compare prices 2004 to 2014, which is a range of 10 years. From what I can remember, most food, the basic stuff like rice, sugar, flour, meat, vegetables, more than 50%. For example, if you take rice, for medium range rice of 10 kilo, 10 years ago, it was around $13. Now it is 20 plus or more, depending on even the better grade. Another item which is quite obvious, sugar. Meat, $10 a kilo, or is around 20. Chicken, maybe 380, 10 years ago, is around 7. So it's more than around 50% or more. I mean, these are just simple, basic things. Don't talk about luxury goods.
So how does she cope? Kamwan started with a pension of about 1,600 ringgit. Today, she's still barely within the 2,000 ringgit bracket. In the 20 years since, her pension has only increased by about 500 ringgit, or 30%. And so, her only option is to cut costs.
So, I can't keep up with the present cost of basic stuff. In order to overcome this, I have to, well, cut costs wherever I can. When it comes to food, fish, for example. Better quality fish is out of our list. Now we go in for sardines. Fish that we could feed on 10 years ago, even though we were not rich, like grouper, we could still manage. But now it is out of our list. That is just one item. Then when it comes to food like vegetables and they're called perishables, what we usually do is we will go to the supermarket when it's around 5 o'clock, time for them to close, and they push out items that cannot last for the day, like bread or vegetables, which we can pick up for much lesser cost. And I think I can speak for a lot of pensioners, because when I go to these areas, there are a lot of old people milling around, picking up bargains, sort of. So that is one way of cutting costs. Another way of cutting costs, I think we frequent second-hand shops. Where clothes are concerned, pensioners don't actually need new stuff because you don't have to work. But we do need clothes once in a while.
Beyond cutting costs, is there any other way for Kee Kam Wan to supplement her income?
Work-wise, I guess you can do odd jobs, but at our age, there are not many takers.
Up next is Alia, an urbanite in her 20s. She's been married for 9 months and learning how to manage her home and her finances and her life. She's been going to markets since young, which not only offers savings, but is a way to connect with the community. I joined her at the Pasar Seni.
So I've been going to markets since ever. And my mother used to wake me up at 5 or 6, and we would go to the Pasar Tani, and you could talk to the guy and the guy could give you the best cuts or the best fish. Or so yeah, that was nice. And yeah, I still do that now because I didn't go to markets because it's just a different feel, I think.
Saya sudah datang sini 20 tahun lebih, saya tak tahu nama uncle.
Hoi, Chong Nong Chan.
So, uncle sudah dekat sini dah berapa lama?
Ayah, saya pun tak ingat lah. Start sampai sekarang, 20 lebih tahun lah.
20 lebih tahun lah. Oh.
So, this market start to now lah.
I remember last time when I was small, yeah. I used to sit with auntie, help her siang ikan bilis.
Oh, here, orang customer here.
Yeah.
Orang customer, all friends. Coming, yeah, sit down friends. Talking.
My mother also, she still remembers you.
Markets are a great way to connect to the people who grow your vegetables, and if you want to save money, nothing beats the wholesale markets.
If you want to buy in bulk, or if you're really, you know, finicky about saving money, then for meats and seafood, you should definitely go to a market. You can go to a wholesale market where they will sell you gigantic quantities of seafood for a very cheap price. Get a 6 kg bag of lala if you want to and split it later, you know, and it'll be a lot cheaper than buying it at a Pasar Tani even. Like, even just that one step to the Pasar Tani will increase the price.
And then there's Bob. You remember Bob. You heard from him a little earlier on in the show. Bob likes to call himself a rebel. He's been a limo driver, he's worked in a bank, he's done property valuation. Now he owns a factory that manufactures corrugated boxes. Bob lives in Bukit Kapar Meru with his family.
Family, this is my wife. She works at DG.
Major.
Bob and his wife Emma have a son.
Yeah, that's my son. He's 9 years old.
They also have 4 daughters.
I have Form 4, Form 3, Form 1 and Standard 6.
Emma brings in a steady income of about 4,000 ringgit a month. Bob's income is variable.
I fluctuate. Sometimes I hit, sometimes I don't, sometimes I exceed that.
Both Bob and Emma are worried.
Definitely, that's why I lose my hair. My wife helps on the good trajectory of career. Thank you, God. So it helps to cushion the blow lah.
They're worried about their expenses.
I wouldn't deny it, definitely. It's a very huge pressure with the increase of living costs nowadays. And with 5 of them, it's all teenagers. So tell me about it.
They're worried about the price of food.
Yes, very much. We don't buy fish, we just stick to chickens. Like, every day is chicken. Yeah, it's very, very demanding just to get a very healthy food. It's just basic request, and healthy food, but all we can afford is just chicken.
They're worried about their children's future.
That's how slowly we teach them to start savings. We don't have much to live for them. And sometimes school holidays doesn't mean anything because we couldn't afford to bring them anywhere. Most of the time, they would be assisting us in the factory.
But they're not without hope. They have plans, they have dreams, and they're doing the best they can given the circumstances. Bob is a proud man. He doesn't believe in handouts.
I have hopes, right? I think we should encourage people who are doing more business at home. I have an idea. Say a gardener. People always make joke of the gardener at school, you know, the butt of the jokes. But if they can be retrained to be a technician, they can fix the broken toilet, they can fix the lamp, then it's justifiable to give them extra allowance, then it's elevate the lowest rung of the people in the school, right? The gardener, okay? So the skill that he got, he can use in his part-time. The Saturday, the Sunday, he can make more money, right? You can't feed the nation with handouts. Why don't they ask them to fish? How to fish? Don't give them to fish, you know? Even in Islam said, the hand that gives is better than the hand that receives. We should be able to give, not to receive.
Emma is focused on bringing their small business to the next level.
We wish to be somewhere, still a long way to go.
I asked Emma what she would do if she was the Prime Minister.
I don't aim to be Prime Minister, but at least if I were to be among the leaders, should go down to the lowest level and understand what do they feel and how do they feel and how do they overcome their daily difficulties. So from there, once you are on the field, you know how they feel and you put yourself among them, then you would totally understand, then you know what you should do. But you don't feel it, then you wouldn't understand the actual situations, the difficulties that your people is facing.
I just try whatever the fellow Malaysians do. Grit your teeth and just do it.
Coming up in part two of our episode, we speak to the experts to get the lowdown on just what's going on with all these price hikes, with some advice on what the man on the street can do to help ease the burden. We look at proactive solutions to ensure quality of life in this changing environment. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Here and Now in Malaysia, produced by the Economic Transformation Programme. You're listening to Here and Now in Malaysia, produced by the Economic Transformation Programme. I'm Umapagan Ampikepagan, and today we're taking a look at the cost of living. In part one, we spoke to four Malaysians to find out how they're coping. Now we're going to speak to a couple of experts in order to better understand the economic factors that are at play. Then we'll take a look at some alternative solutions to living sustainably, healthily, and within your means. First up, Dr. Lee Hwak On, a senior lecturer from the Faculty of Economics and Administration at University Malaya. Here, he talks to us about the public perception of the rising cost of living.
I think people's sentiments, public sentiments, based on their experience that cost of living has increased, there would be a tendency, very naturally, to focus on, you know, the items that are top of the hierarchy, especially food. A lot of people will testify to food prices having gone up. There's certainly been a steep rise in recent times in global food prices as well, and that was reflected in, you know, the inflation rate. There is a certain disconnect, I think, people feel between the inflation rate, which for Malaysia has always, you know, been very modest, and what people experience.
What then is the economic context behind cost of living? Is it a global issue? Julian Ng from The Morning Run, who also hosts the Ringgit and Sense program, tells us more.
It is a global issue. There are two things here when economists look at things. One is a cost push, and the other one is demand pull. I think both of those are working at the economy right now. I think from the cost perspective, there's also the problem of inefficient supply chain, right? Many things that the government is subsidizing right now that sometimes may not lead to the most efficient way of delivering things to consumer, and that actually has the effect of piling up the cost.
Now, because of a certain amount of economic protectionism and subsidies, Malaysia has, for the longest time, been sheltered from the realities of the free market, which is why there will be the inevitable pain that comes with moving towards market-based pricing. For the everyman, it will be felt in the removal of the currently subsidised costs of essential food items, fuel and energy. Short-term pain, or so we're assured, because over the long term, the country will gain from a generally more efficient economy. So who then is affected most by this new reality?
I think very much the lower and middle classes, because their incomes are not rising as fast as the rising costs. Also, the people with fixed incomes, for instance, retirees and pensioners, they largely have incomes which don't rise according, because they're not employed anymore, so they don't have increments, they don't have salary raises, and they would also be very much affected.
The bottom 40% are helped by the various welfare programs, while the top 5% will benefit from the trend to reduce income tax and tend to be generally better off in a liberalizing economy. But what about those stuck in the middle? What more can the government do?
The government, first of all, has to take away inefficiencies of the economy. For example, right now we have a lot of subsidies. I think there is a case to restructure these subsidies, in fact, remove these subsidies, and from the income that is raised from subsidy removal, that can be redistributed to the poorer sections of society. The other thing that they can do is look at it from a long-term viewpoint. I think education is very important. People need to be educated in order to, over the long term, have higher incomes. They need to have their choices of careers expanded so that they can contribute back to the economy in terms of innovation and in terms of knowledge as well. The other thing that we can do is really to make the supply chain systems more efficient, and to do that you have to, sometimes a lot of times actually, you have to let prices find their own levels instead of, as a government, intervening in markets to determine price levels.
So while no one can deny that the economic realities are putting added pressure on the average Malaysian, there is a growing awareness around quality of life and sustainability. Julian Ng introduces to the term disinflation as a way to re-examine the way we spend money versus quality of life.
I think people have to go beyond thinking about cutting costs and think more about disinflation. It's about living life on the slow lane, focusing on the intangibles, and I think generally just being more aware. For instance, you know, if you're sharing a huge plate for lunch, that can not only cut down your costs, but also improve the relationship of who you're sharing your lunch with, for example. And then if we look at, say, gym memberships, for instance, you can actually use nature, run outside instead of paying a few hundred ringgit a month joining a gym, which you would rarely use anyway because you don't have the time to do so. So I think people should, in general, think more about this idea of disinflation.
Food has been one of the main focuses in this episode, and this is where many Malaysians feel the pinch. What can be done to ensure healthy and affordable diets for Malaysians with diminishing purchasing power? Could urban farming be part of the solution? Ili Farhana, her husband and three kids, recently moved from PJ to Serdang, where they have a small plot of land. She calls herself an accidental gardener.
How we started is quite accidental. Sometimes when we eat like, what do you call, pumpkin, accidentally the seeds drop there. So we saw that the seeds are growing. All the papayas are growing, all these vegetables seems to grow there. So at that one time, we had some problem with our economy, family economy. So I was discussing with my husband, I think, you know what, maybe we should grow our own food. So at least if we have problem with our economy and we have like hard times, we can still eat. Well, we have three kids, so we want to feed our kids with healthy food. So we thought that, okay, maybe organic and also permaculture is the right way.
So what started off as a way to feed themselves has now impacted the community at large. They share their harvest with neighbours and friends.
If you talk about change, it's actually start from home. Whatever you harvest, whatever you grow, is the concept of sharing. The nature actually gave us more than what we need. At first, we don't share. We just keep everything put inside the fridge and everything. So it ends up spoiled. So we said, look, why not we just take for what we can eat and then we give all to the neighbors. So that is how also we see that with sharing, people engage with us. Yeah, it's actually more on not about a profit making, or it's beyond actually, it's beyond what the system can offer.
Illy and her family practice permaculture and organic farming techniques, which is part of a growing global trend. But it actually harks back to very traditional kampung values.
My late grandfather and grandmother, yes, they have a lot of, from plants, food plants and vegetables, they have chickens everywhere. Maybe they're from kampung and everything, so they don't talk about permaculture. But when I refresh back, what they do is like, actually they're doing the permaculture. I never thought that you have to buy fruits to eat, because every time I want to eat fruits, I just go back to kampung and I have my fruits. But when I grow up, then I realized that I have to buy everything from vegetable to fruits and from chickens. But when you stay at kampung, when you go back kampung, like, chickens are from backyard, vegetables are from backyard. It's just so nice when you think about it.
The concept of sustainability can be quite revolutionary. The idea that you can make it work on your own is a powerful one.
to me personally, I feel a bit tired when keep complaining about food are increasing. We felt very like oppressed and everything. The system doesn't help us. Then ask myself, can you help yourself actually? Actually, you can. It's not perfect. Suddenly you be totally independent and everything. You still have to live within the system in any country that you live in. But at the same time, like food issues, you can sustain actually. It's not that you have to grow paddies, everything, all. I think it's enough you have few herbs, few vegetables, few fruits. The concept is if you build up a network, for example, just in your area, everybody plants, everybody grow food, everybody have their own vegetable and everybody share, then you can sustain. Then I think it can be a movement.
There is no doubt that the rising cost of living is a burden, but it is the consequence of a necessary process with long-term implications for society and for the country. Malaysia remains one of the most highly subsidized countries in the world. These subsidies have created a distortion to the economy. For example, the rate of inflation, which has been kept artificially low for the past decade. The fact of the matter is that it is neither prudent nor sustainable to control prices through subsidization. There are better ways to control prices, such as promoting competition, increasing efficiency, stimulating production, and enhancing competitiveness. Subsidy rationalization is a necessity, one with some short-term pain which will eventually result in a stronger fiscal position for the people and for the country. The government will no doubt continue to provide for those who need it the most and in a more targeted manner. For the rest of us, however, we will need to figure out how best to weather and thrive in this new reality. As for me, I'm going to start planting some vegetables. I'm Uma Pagan Ampake Pagan, and you've been listening to Here and Now in Malaysia, produced by the Economic Transformation Programme.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.